welcome to Two Boomer Women. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I've been talking with Boomer Women for almost a decade now. Well, I guess I've been talking to Boomer Women all my adult life. Reinventing myself several times along the way, though, but always focused on us, Boomer Women. With this incarnation of Two Boomer Women, I'll be interviewing other women who have a message of interest for our demographic. If you want to hear about or learn about something specific, let me know and I'll find someone who understands us to talk about it. There's a contact page at twoboomerwomen.com. If you want to be a guest on Two Boomer Women, bring it on. There's an application form at the website too. Finally, this show is all about conversation. We women know its value. We know how to do it, and we must perpetuate the art form. So let's get started with today's show. Welcome to Two Boomer Women. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Now, while I do scout around for interesting women to chat with, sometimes someone I never thought of presents herself. And that's the case today with my guest, Kathleen Kanasiewicz of Soul Circle Mandelas. Kathleen, welcome to Two Boomer Women, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Agnes.
I know nothing about mandalas other than the fact that I love them. I love coloring them. And I love examining the details within them. How did mandalas become a focus in your life?
You know, it was really interesting. About, I guess, 16 years ago, I was drawing them all the time. And I had a lot of personal tragedy. I think I had about 4 family members die within a very short period of time. So it was, for me, like this constant state of grief. And I found that through creating mandalas, I was tapping into something deep within myself that was helping me a lot. It was helping me to heal, but it was also tapping into an intuitiveness and a deeper healing and sort of like a global connection. So it was self-created. And then I found out who Carl Jung was many years later, and I fell upon training, I think it was 2019, with Dr. Judith Cornell in California. And I learned how to facilitate mandala art as a healing modality with a group of about 33 other individuals. I went down to San Jose, California, to Mount Madonna Center, and we trained from 7 in the morning till about 10 at night for 10 solid days. It was incredibly intense. We had oncologists, other doctors, lab technicians, shaman, yoga instructors. So it was a really varied group of people, and I learned how to bring my passion of mandala art into a whole different realm. Yeah. So you wanted to know what the mandala was?
Well, it's funny because I just finished telling you before we started that I have notes here and you're like covering all sorts of things. I'll back up the bus just really briefly. First of all, I'm sorry for the continued losses. That, you know, I just can't imagine the one grief after another. That's such a struggle.
It was a lot.
So when you say you created mandalas, were you using physical items or were you sketching or?
I would simply take a dinner plate from the cupboard and just draw a circle and fill it in and sort of do a meditation with it to sort of just see what came out. And you know, sometimes I would incorporate symbols, and different symbols have different meanings in different cultures around the world. So it became more of a knowledge journey for me, and it became like an obsession. And I was new to the internet, I think it was about 15 years ago, and I started collecting pictures of mandalas all over the world. And so I had this slideshow of like thousands of mandalas. And I showed it to various people that you also may be interviewing. One artist who was totally blocked for months, and I sat her down on the computer and had her watch this video of all of these mandalas. And a few days later, she was back and she said, "Oh my God, I couldn't believe what they did for me." So they reach something deep in our subconscious to help open us up and heal us, and I think connect us to something almost inherently a knowingness within us of something that's powerful in the circle.
Okay, I'm going totally off script now because this is so interesting. This is great. I love it when this happens. So one of my questions was, like I mentioned, I love coloring mandalas, whether paper on my desk with colored pencils or whatever. I also do it online. So have I quite innocently, shall we say, unexpectedly, been probably self-healing?
Absolutely. I think that when you are just in your own little world, you're attracted to something that feels really good when you do it. And so that coloring, I think they call it Zen doodle, but the coloring mandalas, color yourself calm. So a lot of people have gotten onto this journey of mandalas, and I think it does. It brings a deep healing to us when we need it the most.
Interestingly, I had a career in elder care many years ago, and I have never lost my love of coloring, period. And I found that if we had like an art class, all these elders would say, "Oh, I can't do this. I have no artistic skill." So I started bringing pictures in, and the mandala pictures were some of the most popular, successful amongst that elderly group. And can you explain that, or was that just coincidental?
I can just from a small experience with an elder group where I had a similar experience where there was just this, some people didn't even know their own names anymore. But when they looked at the mandala, they opened up to something like, wow, let's see where this creativity goes. So with a small group, I actually was able to draw a little circle on a piece of paper. They had watercolors. And so they did their own thing. Some people painted a mandala, and one guy painted a set of boobs because that's what he saw in the two circles that I put on his paper. That's great. And another one drew a bicycle. And so from that circle, a freedom to open up to their own creativity opened up. And these people otherwise would not have created a thing. And so that was the beauty of it. The magic of it was just, I think, allowing themselves to be connected to something that their body knew almost. It was really fun.
That's great. And it's interesting when you talk about just giving them two circles because my grandson, when he was very small, used to spend a lot of time with me, and I would get him coloring at different times. And it was interesting. I mean, you say circles, and I would give him, what I look at it, and unimaginative me, I think I'm giving him a piece of paper with a couple of balls drawn that he can color any which way he wishes. But he created, different things out of the circles. So that's quite interesting.
So it does bring me back to like the meaning of the word mandala comes from the Sanskrit language in India, and it means sacred circle. And it holds to me in all the stuff you could ever read about what a mandala is, to me a mandala is kind of like a holding place. So it's, you could be an artist or you could not be an artist, but if you allow yourself to be guided by somebody else or you just guide yourself, you can put whatever you want to within that circle, and it's held in a sacred geometry, in a place that feels really safe, I think. That's the big thing.
Obviously, I was going to ask you what is a mandala. Part of one of the other things I was going to ask is it always a circle? So maybe
Always.
you know your craft, so
It
please address that.
always is a circle in some mandala teachings, you work with balance and symmetry. I do a workshop on that. I'm really big on that right now. But so working from the center outward, and that's having more balance and symmetry to it. And that's kind of like your traditional mandala. You can put anything at all into the circle, and you can go outside of the circle. There is another sort of flip to that where you put two circles together, and when you have in the center, it's like the shape of an almond in the center. And that shows up in cultures all over the world. Now, in geometry, it's called the Vesica Pisces. And in different religions, it's called the Mandorla. And so when you join the two circles together, you still are using a mandala, but you've actually created almost like bringing in the divine feminine and the divine masculine and joining them together, or the yin and the yang. And so you can bring those energies together, and whatever you create in the center is the center of that joining. And so that would be your own. Mandala to me is always circle. Yeah.
Now, if you were to present, you know, like if we had visuals here, if you were to present a completed mandala with different features within it, is there any static meaning? So does it hold a universally based meaning, or is it a meaning specific to the person appreciating it?
Well, when I facilitate a mandala workshop, which I this is kind of where I go now, it's recommended that, number one, we don't, if you're sitting in a circle or you're in a Zoom group with me, we don't interpret somebody else's mandala, because I could look at yours and see an elephant, and you did not draw an elephant. So to you, that picture of what you drew is yours and yours only. And so that is for you to interpret. That is for you to look at today. Maybe it's something that came to you in your subconscious or in a dream, and it doesn't have meaning to you today, but 6 months from now, you could look at it and say, oh my God, I know exactly what that is. And so sometimes it becomes that porthole of a visionary experience, and it has meaning to you, deep meaning to you, that you may look at and get today or not. And it may come years from now. And so that's the magic of them. And I think that's the awareness that we end up learning over a period of time. I'm just going to grab you. I just to show you because, well, you know, you're in a...
Because we are looking at each other, even if our listeners can't see. This is
like,
great.
This is what I did many, many years ago.
Okay.
And it's really tiny. I'm putting them on these little journals to sell. But so this is the flower of life. And then it has the eight petals of the lotus flower. And of course, inside is, well, it's got all kinds of meaning to it. I did this as a logo for a friend of mine's business. Now, the tree of life is on the inside. So I've done hundreds of mandalas. And I have usually 12 by 12 black paper. Now I'm painting. I'm bringing the circle into, you know, metal art and mosaic art. So when I teach a mandala workshop, I explain what the mandala is, but where we find it, like it's in the iris of your eyes. So that's round. It's in the wheels on a car. It's in the cells in our bodies. It's in the sun and the moon and the stars and the planets. They're all round. And so when you look around in nature, we have mandalas absolutely everywhere we look. You just need to look. And so once you know that they're there, you find that the circle is everywhere and it can be sacred to you or not. I mean, in indigenous cultures, for example, I mean, you know, this kind of thing here, you know, where you would have the medicine wheel or different sort of Aboriginal designs, they've been using the circle in a drum and in the medicine wheel for centuries. And so it's an intuitive connection to something deep within. that holds and is sacred.
So, you know, you mentioned the Sanskrit originally as the origins. Can I use that word?
Yeah, I would say so.
But yet a lot of cultures have incorporated the circle in some way.
Yes, and they don't call it a mandala, but they call it a sacred circle, or they just don't have a name. They just do it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But it has the same effect. And sorry, I'm struggling for words here because I don't.
You know, for the first few years that I got into mandala, and when I started to teach mandala, I had a really difficult time explaining what it was, and I think, you know, I was afraid of my own shadow or something, because I knew what it was. I experienced it, but I think I was afraid to talk about that. And so it's actually quite simple, and it's something really beautiful that when I teach and I facilitate a class, everybody gets it, no matter what their age, no matter what their artistic talent. I've had people in circle who say, I have no artistic ability, or he's a special needs kid. I tell you, he's not going to do a thing, Rana, right now. I can tell you, he won't do a thing. And they're 100% in every single time. I've never had a kid not do something. Even if it's taking a feather and drawing and pressing on the paper, I can see it. And so the meaning is there, and that's the beauty of it. Yeah.
Now, in the first one you showed me, you talked about the petals of the lotus flower.
Mm-hmm.
What I find when I'm coloring mandalas, and it's interesting because it actually creates a little bit of tension within me,
yeah,
is if there's an even number of points or petals or whatever you want to call it, I find that really sort of congruent. If there's an odd number, if there's 5 or 9, something doesn't work for me. And it's an internal thing that I can't explain, but it does it matter, or is there any explanation for the number of points, whether they're petals or part of the design or whatever, that come to the edge of the circle?
Well, when you start to research it, you know, there is different meaning behind 8 petals or 4 petals or 7 petals or stars, where you have a 5-pointed star or a 6 or 7-pointed or 8-pointed star. They all have different meaning in different cultures. And so you may be subconsciously resonating with something inherently in you about that particular balance of numbers. And it's a balance that you need. You need an even number.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's interesting because, I mean, I just did a balance and symmetry workshop, and one woman said, I couldn't do, like, I recommended starting with 4 because it's an easy number to go with. And she went with 3 right away, and it was like totally magical what she created, because it was a number that was resonating with her. And so the beauty of that is she was connecting, and that's where you want to bring people to. Yeah.
Just as an aside, it's interesting because if anybody were to ever ask me about a lucky number or something, I would always say 9.
Really?
Yep.
It's an odd number.
It's an odd number. Ah, dear. I used to think that mandalas were these perfect designs that repeated around the circle, but I've also noticed doing research now, before we talked, that some mandalas seem to be, you know, completely symmetrical, and others seem to be more of a scene.
Yeah.
Is that different cultures, or
historically it's different cultures, but I think in a modern age, it's again, you know, whatever person who's creating that wants to put into the circle is that holding place for, say, that scene. I've actually done quite a few that way. I mean, I have lots I could show you right now, but
I have browsed your website.
Well, that doesn't even put a slice on
the
list that I have. And I'm working on getting some things printed. COVID-19 keeps preventing me from going to see this woman who does this work, and winter, because she lives up in the mountains too.
Okay.
And so mandala can be really anything that's held within the circle. Anything. it's become a therapeutic art. And so, I mean, that's kind of a new age name for it. And this is how I've been trained as well, is to bring it as a therapeutic, as a healing art. And it guides people just to create what is inside of them.
And I think a lot of ancient cultures inherently knew that. Yeah. Whereas we think we've invented this amazing new therapy, in air quotes.
Yeah, yeah. So they're just modern names put to a very ancient process of healing art. Yeah. Okay. Or symbolic art. Mm-hmm. So, like, the mandala shows up in Egypt, and the flower of life shows up carved into ancient temples. You can find the same thing in Syria that you find in Australia. In Hopi cultures, in their patterns and their designs, you can find the same patterns and designs in Finland or Norway. And so back then, they didn't have the internet. They didn't have, you know, the sharing of pictures and information and a mailing system. They just created sometimes the same exact things on different parts of the planet. And so that's always fascinating.
I think too, and I'm going sideways completely here, but I know my son traveled in South America. And when he came back to Canada, he said, "Mom, life is so bland here," you know, because we've got the colors of nature, which are the greens and the browns and some floral colors. But in South America, they had vivid colors and just incorporating your surroundings basically into your art and your fabric and everything there. So it sounds like mandalas also do the same, where the culture has incorporated their world into their
absolutely
designs.
Absolutely. And I think that your son is absolutely right. When you go to other cultures, you see a lot of their culture in woven into their artwork. And yeah, for sure, in South America, Mexico, there's a real definitive design that shows up, and you could almost say, "Oh, I know that's from Mexico." And if you went to the Middle East or Tunisia, you would see, "Oh, the patterns are definitely like Moroccan style or something." Yeah, but in Ireland and in Scotland, they have different patterns that also are mirrored in other parts of the world. So that's always the mystery part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting. When you were talking about the different, like the distance between similar things, it was like, wow, like how does that happen? And perhaps, and rightly so, it should be one of the mysteries of the world. I think we do need a few mysteries.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because one of my questions was going to be, but I think we've well answered it, was just that I color mandalas. And I wasn't sure if it was mere entertainment and escapism, or whether, you know, there was any disrespect shown to an ancient tradition. But it sounds like, because it's such an internal thing, that, you know, as I said at the beginning, maybe I was self-healing, self-therapying.
Of course. Yeah. I think that's why they've been so popular, the coloring mandalas and coloring yourself calm, because it is, when you're creating a mandala, it is your meditation time. It is your calming time. And there's something that just brings out that calming, if that's what you need at the time. I mean, there was one mandala I created about 15 years ago, and I don't know where this one came from, but I grunted the whole entire time I made it. And it was really odd. And I was totally aware of it. And so I think it was something very ancient and very ancestral inside that just wanted to come out. And I really don't have an explanation for that one yet.
So once again, because we can see each other and our listeners can't see either of us, are mandalas such a part of your life now that you just go toward them? Or I'm looking at your necklace.
Oh, right. So I do. I'm absolutely addicted to circles. And so this necklace I got many years ago, and it's actually based on biogeometry, and there's ancient symbols in here that have different healing for the body, different meaning. I was going to take a course on it. Actually, I was going to go back to the island of Malta in March. That didn't happen. And take this incredibly overpriced course with this incredibly overpriced airline ticket and go broke in the process, but I wanted to learn it. And so even my coins, these
Oh,
are,
okay.
I just had a friend make these. These are the Da Vinci Man. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah, I can't see it well enough.
But they're
Just as
coins.
an aside, Kathleen's showing me her earrings.
Yeah. They're coins. And again, they're circles. And so I have circles absolutely everywhere. So I have wagon wheels outside. I have different art pieces in circles. I like squares too, though, but
Okay, so you mentioned the word geometric. Interestingly, next question on my list of notes is whether or not mandalas have any relationship to labyrinths.
I think they absolutely do, because again, a labyrinth is, depending on the culture where you are, it's a walking path usually in the shape of a circle. And so you go into that usually physically, or you can create it on paper, but you come into a walking meditation. And so labyrinths, I've created a few in my life, and I'm attracted to them, very much attracted to them. And I think it's because of the mandala and the meditation portion that goes with it. Yeah.
So, have we you a answered the question of what is a mandala? I think maybe.
Well, so to me, a mandala is a circle. In Sanskrit, it means sacred circle, and so a mandala is a holding place. It's a porthole for whatever comes up or whatever you want to gift somebody too, because you can put. When I facilitate, and I think it's really important to learn through any kind of mandala art, is your intention. So the meaning. Now you can have subconscious and you don't know what you're doing, you just do it. But when you have intention and you put through, say, a prayer or a meditation, your intention of what you want to put into that mandala or get out of that mandala, then through that intention, it actually has a lot of power. So it becomes very self-empowering. And that's an amazing tool for any age to have. Yeah.
Every once in a while, when I'm chatting with someone who has something that I know very little about, I have these little aha moments. And I don't know if you said porthole or portal, but it was interesting. It occurred to me in my brain, is there really technically any difference? And the portal into even just a place in your mind or a frame of mind, or I'm not putting this very well, but a place within yourself, I suppose. It's almost like mission accomplished.
So it's when you're creating a mandala or you're doodling and drawing in a coloring book, it's you're connecting to something deep within yourself and allowing that connection to be aligned with, say, your higher self, or it depends on what your belief systems are, but more of a cosmic diagram, or something divine, something bigger than yourself that has this sort of web of life and this connection to something more powerful than we learned in school.
The older I get, the more I realize we didn't really learn a lot of useful stuff in school. I've got a few other questions, but before we move on, is there anything else about mandalas that you should tell us? Like in terms of our understanding? You can say no, that's okay.
I can't. In terms of understanding, no, I think that, it's what you create, it's what you put into it, and it's what you, the viewer, see in say you are in a gallery and you see a piece, or you're on the internet and you see a mandala, and something really reaches you deeply. And that is your connection to whatever that is that you need, or you need to let go of at the time. And so that's part of the beauty and the mystery of it too. Yeah.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that question. I just, because I come with a list of, you know, thoughts or questions or something, I'd hate to finish the conversation and you thinking, darn it, she didn't ask me about, you know, something. So you teach classes on mandala art, both privately in the classroom. What does that process look like?
Well, if I'm doing it live or have funding, I'll actually supply the materials. And so I know the space that I'm going to be working in, and I bring a sacredness to it. I bring a confidentiality to the group. I talk about all of those things that when you're sitting in the sacred circle, you're holding space for each other. And so I set up a pretend campfire in the center of the room with these beads and lights. And I bring different items and I place them in the center. Depending on the group, I can ask people to bring an item or a trinket or something that's really important to them. And we start out with the guidelines and go through what the art materials are, why we use. I often in workshops use black paper because we come from the darkness into the light when we're creating our mandala. And we set intentions. In every single group I do, we set an intention. And so what is it that you need to bring into the mandala or to let go of? And so that's a gift for that individual to come into their own inner trust almost like I'd say 99% of the time, it really resonates with the person at the end of the process. And so they'll review what their intention was. And sometimes it can be really profound for them. And that belongs to them. Yeah.
Interesting concept that I had not even considered is that if someone is expressing something that is perhaps from deep within, perhaps that they weren't aware of, that confidentiality, that privacy, the sacredness of the space is extremely important.
It is extremely important because things can come up for people that I do ask people to share, and they can choose not to share. But what others think often has such an influence on us, and that fear can come up for people where they don't trust the other people in the circle. And so I emphasize those points. You know, if we did a full day workshop, I would emphasize it before we started. I would emphasize it again after lunch, and we would start again. I always make certain that we're really clear on that. And so I can't even really talk about it. So the things that come up, like I do a grief workshop, and a lot of stuff comes up for a lot of people. Grief is not just somebody dying, but it's also something in your life that died, you know, a relationship or a way of life. And, you know, much of what's happening through COVID-19 and the pandemic is a huge loss of way of life for a lot of people all over the world. And so I actually was going to do a couple of workshops on that, and they're really long, and I wanted to do them in person. And so they haven't happened quite yet, but I'm doing other little things that are important for bringing that healing to the community in which I live and I work.
When you were able to do live workshops, and will again, I promise. as if I have the ultimate power. Is there a difference, or I don't know what, is there a difference between adult workshops and children's workshops in terms of how they express?
I think that's an excellent question, Agnes. I really do, because there's been times where I've been putting together an adult workshop, and I always come full circle back to myself and say, "Oh, Kathleen, just keep it simple." And then I think, if I just worked with the adults the same way I work with the children, what? They wouldn't know the difference. And sometimes I do. And it's very successful because I think when we're connecting as adults, we're actually given that ability to connect to our child play or our playful child that's inside of all of us. It helps us to lower our inhibitions and more things can come out. So, but I do, when I work with children, I don't use the word intention. I use the words dreams or wishes. And so they understand them better. So there's some words that no matter what, children just aren't going to understand them. And so I change the words for them. But otherwise, the process is almost the same.
Yeah, I just got to thinking because once again, you have pictures on your website of some of the children and their art. I was just thinking that, a child hasn't learned that you don't talk about that, or you keep the, nobody wants to know that your thoughts, like stuff that we bring, all the baggage that we have as adults about not expressing true feeling or grief. I mean, oh, you'll get over it. Oh, think of something else. Like all those little things that people say that are just so wrong. And children haven't learned that yet, which is lovely.
No, they don't. And I've done mandala groups with lots of children, and one in particular was on suicide and unresolved grief with teenagers. And you're not going to get the teenager in the room if you say those words, unresolved grief. They're not going to come. You're going to talk about your belief system and your ancestors and you're going to offer pizza. And so, and you get them there. And I've actually had like 100% attendance for teenagers to come. And then to me, that's remarkable. Once a week for 4 weeks, and every time they all show up. And it's allowing them to own their own feelings and try and understand them, because most oftentimes they don't understand them. And they also are given an opportunity to express that through some kind of art, which blows my mind every time. And I think it's allowing them to understand that as they grow older, their belief system can change. And you know as well as I know that our beliefs have changed over time. And they don't know that that's they think sometimes that they're supposed to think like their parents or their grandparents or their teachers. And to have that ownership of that ability to change how you feel or how you believe about something and how you can feel. And so allow yourself in to feel is really important. So that's why I call the work that I do with children, which can be exhausting at my age, but it's more self-empowering for them. So you're teaching them a truth, you're teaching them many things, and they're teaching themselves about many things and allowing those feelings to come and change.
I am just so, I don't know what the word is, impressed, excited, happy, thrilled, whatever, that you work with teenagers because they're right on the precipice of turning into adults. And I use that term almost
I
derogatorily.
was a teenager, I know.
Yeah, oh yeah, don't we all? And we've worked really hard to get back to this place that we're in right now. And they're just, they still have a glimmer of that child within themselves better than adults. And the fact that you can, have an effect or reach them is very cool. That's great. We're probably going to have to wrap just from a time point of view. So interesting. And Now, one last question, I guess, and I don't know if you can answer this easily or if you even want to, and you're welcome to say you don't want to answer it. Your name was given to me by Phyllis. And for our listeners, Phyllis Chubb is a Jyotish astrologer who I interviewed several weeks ago, two episodes. So go back and look into the files once we're done. You're not allowed to leave right now. How did you and Phyllis connect?
Well, I lived on Vancouver Island for quite some time. And one of my neighbors, Corey Lunn, who has the studio there in Union Bay, her and her husband, they're phenomenal artists. She introduced me to Phyllis, who she'd been learning from for many years. And I ended up taking a few courses on Vedic astrology with Phyllis. And then I went to her speaking engagements and read her books. And we just became really good friends. And if we lived near each other, we'd be like tied by the hip. And so we like similar things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Phyllis is certainly an entity unto herself. So interesting and smart. And yeah, I enjoyed. We actually had to do two interviews just because I could have probably done another half dozen. I told her she should have her own podcast. Kathleen, thank you for today. Each week I try to do a bit of homework on this subject that my guests will be talking about, and I must admit I was really struck by how many assumptions I had about mandalas, but how much I really didn't know. Where do people find you if they want to learn more about you and or workshops?
Well, for right now it's through my website, it's soulcirclemandalas.com. And it's 11 years old, the website, and I'm in process of recreating that. I have a Facebook page as well, so that's under Soul Circle Mandalas. And I am doing lots of things on social media. I will be rebuilding that website. I've got a lot of things on the go that I'm kind of changing up how I present myself. And so that's where people can find me.
Great. And I'll put both those links into the show notes so listeners can go and learn more about you. Or it sounds like, is it the Facebook page that's probably the most current place to learn more about
you? Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah. Yes and no. Some things never change, too. I did want to get back to that thought, though, about the teenagers. I had worked with young children for many years. And then I had an opportunity when they lost a couple of teachers in the school and I went downstairs to the high school. And even after my first day, I'm like, I love this. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I knew the kids when they were smaller, so I think it made a difference. But I actually really enjoyed working with teenagers. Yeah, not many people do. It can be scary.
Yeah. I've never worked with them, but I know, I mean, I have three kids, so I always had a revolving door and I always enjoyed them. The older they got and the more they got their own thoughts and just talking to them.
Yeah.
They're a great group of people, a great demographic. Listeners, if you have any comments or questions about anything you heard on the show today, or you can contact Kathleen at either one of the spots that we will mention, I'll put in the show notes. You can join the conversation at twoboomerwomen.com/join-the-conversation. You can also rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. The more stars, the better. thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you, Agnes. It was a pleasure.
Have a great rest of week.
You too. Bye-bye.